Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Have you heard the rumors about Barack Obama's upbringing? What about the ones swirling around Sarah Palin's family? And what is the scuttlebutt around your office these days? Like them or hate them, rumors are a fact of modern life, probably ancient life too. And as it turns out, they are a much misunderstood phenomenon. For example, rumors are not typically started with malicious intent, although we will talk about gossip later. And in certain settings, rumors are remarkably likely to be accurate. So how can we deconstruct the rumors that we do encounter and the way they affect our outlook on the world? Nicholas DeFonso has devoted his career to questions like these. He is professor of psychology at the Rochester Institute of Technology. His new book is called The Water Cooler Effect: A Psychologist Explores the Extraordinary Power of Rumors. Nick, welcome to Think.
Hi. Glad to be here.
So how do rumors help us make sense of the world?
Rumors are a collective response to uncertainty and situations where we just simply don't know what's going on, or we're trying to figure out what's about to happen, or we're trying to protect ourselves from some kind of threat or risk. And there's an information void. And so people start coming up with speculation and hypotheses and explanations, and they start passing them around to one another, trying to make sense of that uncertainty together, and that's what rumor is.
And our need for information, I guess, is so great that it even outweighs our need for verifiably correct information.
That's right. Sometimes that verifiably correct information is just not available, or we may think it's not available. We don't trust the official news sources, or the news sources might not have any information. And so we are uncomfortable when we're faced with uncertainty. And lots of times it's important for us to just act and do something rather than nothing to prepare for the unknown or this, whatever situation that we're in. So yeah, the need for that information sometimes overrides our ability to verify that information.
So people come together and they're talking about something they don't fully understand or that they've heard a bit about, and then they start speculating about what that might mean, and pretty soon it's lost that one of those comments was speculation and somebody takes it away as fact.
Well, ordinarily people do sort of keep in the back of their minds how credible the information is, but lots of times they don't. In fact, much of the time when we pass information along, we may not even know that it's not credible information. We may not know that it's objectively false. And we simply trust what people tell us and don't think twice about passing it along. So yes, there's a lot of bad information going on out there or being passed around out there. And lots of times people don't take the responsibility. It's not ordinarily thought of as their responsibility to check that information.
It's very interesting when you write about the different filters that we tend to apply in evaluating the veracity of whatever it is we've been told, because those filters really change according to how badly we need the information and what we think we know already.
Oh, yeah, that's right. If we are in an urgent situation, a calamity or some kind of natural disaster, or we're physically threatened in some way, the point is we have to act quickly. And so verifying is a sort of a luxury. There are other filters that we apply. Some rumors are plausible to some people and not to others. In fact, I would say that almost all rumors are plausible to one group but not plausible to other groups. So there is this plausibility filter as well.
And in the same way that people are often criticized for choosing media sources that reinforce what they already know or think they know, The same thing happens with rumors. If something sort of reinforces the way we feel about a particular situation, we're more likely to believe it.
Well, that's absolutely right. That's one of the cues to belief in a rumor. So an old example of that is from World War II. American citizens that were opposed to the Roosevelt administration were much more likely to believe rumors about waste and special privilege in the government, rumors that the U.S. government was wasting lots of resources and was handing over these resources to high-level officials in a corrupt manner. So that sort of rumor agreed with their attitude, which was opposed to the Roosevelt administration.
Nicholas DeFonso is my guest. He's professor of psychology at the Rochester Institute of Technology. His new book is called The Water Cooler Effect: A Psychologist Explores the Extraordinary Power of Rumors. Are highly educated people any less susceptible to believing rumors than those who have less formal education?
I'm asked that question a lot, and I think the answer is probably not. I really can't say for sure because there's been we typically don't measure education or intelligence when we do these studies. I think the answer is probably not because rumors abound in the educated spheres as well as the uneducated spheres. It simply or mostly depends on what resonates with the group. So for the educated group, some things resonate, and for the uneducated group, other things, maybe not necessarily different things, resonate. And education has, I think, a minor part to play. Let me give you an example of that ties into another factor that's associated with belief, and that's a couple studies we recently did on the effect of hearing a rumor repeatedly. So what we found in these studies was that hearing a rumor repeatedly increased belief in the rumor, which is a little scary in and of itself. But the second finding is the one that's pertinent here, and that was we also measured the person's level of skepticism. And what we found is that skepticism moderated that effect, but just a little bit. In other words, the main effect by far was that if you heard the rumor repeatedly, you would believe it. Skeptical people were just slightly less strongly believed it, but not much.
So how do you go about measuring what people believe is rumor? Since I would imagine some of the things that people have incorporated into their thinking, they don't even consider to be rumors anymore.
Well, that's correct. Oftentimes, if we have a survey, we do interviews, we'll just simply ask people, how confident are you that this statement is true? And that's how we measure belief. We might also look for behavioral measures. In the past, I've programmed computer games simulating stock market trading, and my students participated in mock stock market trading. And so we just observed their pattern of buying and selling. But most of the time, we simply ask people.
We should talk a little bit more about the stock market. Just this week, we had sort of a terrifying example of rumors and misinformation getting out there. United Airlines stock plummeted 75% in value before trading was finally halted on an incorrect report that they were going to declare bankruptcy.
Right. So the effect of stock market rumors has long been known. In fact, when journalists have to make sense of these dramatic changes in stock price, they often rely on news of the day or rumors that are circulating in the market. Now, what I found over a period of about 10 years ago, 10 to 16 years ago, I conducted several studies, was that rumors tended to draw people away from a very profitable buy low, sell high strategy. So one of the basic rules of life is you have to buy something at a low cost and sell it at a high cost in order to make money. And people who are successful in the stock market, by and large, follow that rule of thumb. But what we found was that when we gave participants rumors as they were trading, they departed from that trading strategy, and they consequently made less money. And this was very surprising in light of the fact that the rumors predicted tomorrow's price change. So even though you're tipped off about tomorrow's price change, the overall effect of the rumors, and news, by the way, was to depart from this very profitable strategy. People became, as we say, rumor-dependent rather than price-dependent.
Nick, what factors into whether we spread rumors to other people or sort of let the buck stop with us?
Okay, so there are lots of reasons why people will spread rumors. So we could look at it from a motivational standpoint. One of the biggest reasons is people simply want to figure out the facts. They want to ferret out the facts, and I call this the accuracy motives. Hey, I heard that KERA is downsizing. What have you heard? And we just simply want to know the situation so we can act appropriately. Another is just kind of a social enhancement kind of motive. I'll tell you a rumor just to solidify our friendship so that you'll like me more, our relationship will be enhanced. A third type of motivation is I'll tell you a rumor, and often this rumor might be a bad thing about the rival group, and that will boost my own self-esteem. That'll make me feel better by comparison. By putting down another group, that'll make me feel better by comparison.
I was really surprised to read how often rumors in certain situations are likely to be grounded in fact. For example, rumors in the military, rumors in the workplace. These are places where we're sort of told never to believe anything that we've heard.
Yeah, I think in lots of situations, this has been one of the very surprising findings in my career, is that in lots of situations, things are set up so that it's likely that the rumor that survives is accurate. Workplace settings in which there are many connections between people, it's dense interconnection. There are lots of people in the organization that know what they're talking about in relation to the rumor or the rumor situation. People are motivated to find the facts rather than some other motive. You know, after a little bit of time, people are really good at ferreting out the facts if they want to and if they have half a chance at it, if they're half equipped to do it. So lots of times, rumors do become quite accurate.
So they learn to sort of read the tea leaves in whatever situation they're in.
Well, that's right. So I'll give you an example. One time we studied a large corporation nearby here in Rochester, New York. They were downsizing, a dramatic downsize. It was a large percentage of people that were going to be let go. The rumor went around. The rumor was that this person, certain, there's a whole list of people that were going to be let go. A week before the official announcement came out, that rumor was 100% correct. So it was extremely accurate. If you're in an organization where people really want to know the facts and there's probably some leaks, I would bet money on that rumor.
Well, you know, what's really interesting about that, Nick, I have never worked at an organization that had layoffs where it wasn't sort of a very poorly kept secret a week or two before, even though it was supposed to be a surprise announcement. And I'm wondering if there is, and I'm not talking about deliberate leaks, but I'm wondering if there is some benefit to this information sort of getting out and being tested among people so that the shock is not quite so great when something negative happens.
Sure. Managers are often human beings as well, and they want to prepare their subordinates for an eventual dreaded outcome. Sure, they want to help people get ready for that layoff notice, and so they'll leak it to them.
And can you talk about how rumors are related to anxiety?
Anxiety leads to rumor spreading. If a person is anxious or a group of people is anxious, they're much more likely to try and make sense of the situation or manage threats. So anxiety goes along with this threat management function as well, obviously. So a good example of that is where we're in a situation where something bad is about to happen to us. Let's say there's an impending tsunami or a storm or something like that, and we're not sure what to do. Our anxiety level goes up. We start to talk to one another to try and figure out how can we best prepare for this storm.
Nicholas DeFonso is my guest. He's professor of psychology at the Rochester Institute of Technology. His new book is called The Water Cooler Effect: Psychologist Explores the Extraordinary Power of Rumors. After the break, we will talk about a different kind of rumor, and that is gossip. You're welcome to join the conversation by calling us at 1-800-933-5372 or sending email to think@kera.org.
Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, offering flexible part-time graduate study. You can follow your passion at SMU and learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris. Chris Boyd. I'm speaking this hour with Professor Nicholas DeFonso. He teaches and studies psychology at the Rochester Institute of Technology. His new book is called The Water Cooler Effect. A psychologist explores the extraordinary power of rumors. You can join us by sending email to think@kera.org or by calling 1-800-933-5372. Let's talk, Nick, about gossip, because many people use the term rumor interchangeably with gossip. But in fact, from your perspective as a psychologist, they are two very different things.
That's right. Whereas rumor is unverified information that's in circulation, usually people are trying to ferret out the facts, make sense, or manage threat. Gossip is evaluative social chat, usually about someone who's not present, typically derogatory. Often it's kind of titillating in nature, might be entertaining. Often it might be said to divide off the other person, put them down, or separate them from your social group, or to bond with the person that you're telling the gossip to. So the classic rumor would be, hey, I hear that KERA is downsizing. What have you heard? Whereas the classic gossip would be, hey, did you hear about Larry at the Christmas party the other night? What he did was absolutely either fantastic or terrible.
And we tell that story about Larry to other people. Why? To sort of cut down Larry in other people's opinions, or to make sure that we're the center of attention?
Yeah, so several reasons. One is to bond with the person. We gossip with people who are our friends. You don't gossip with somebody who's your enemy. So to include that person, you share a little bit of gossip. You might secondly have a strategic motive, as you implied. I might be trying to diminish Larry in your eyes and build myself up in your eyes at the same time. Gossip also has a group function in that if I'm putting down what Larry does, that communicates to you that's the kind of thing that we really ought not to do. So gossip, as bad as it sometimes is, as socially caustic as it sometimes is, it does perform a useful function in that it communicates these social norms that occasionally help the social group function better.
So if we're gossiping that Larry got drunk at the Christmas party, we're telling the person we're telling that story to that that's not acceptable behavior.
If the context and the tone and the intent of our telling it is shame gossip, Larry got drunk, he shouldn't have got drunk, it was despicable behavior, yes. If it's laudatory gossip, whoa, Larry got drunk, can you believe it? It's so great. Then we're supporting Larry's and other people's behavior in that way.
You know, it's interesting, Nick, because most people would not want to admit that they engage in gossip, that they like to hear gossip, and yet I would say most people do it to a certain extent. Is there a social cost to those people who will not listen to it? They want to walk out of the room, and they certainly won't repeat gossip.
It's really tough to be a person who refuses to listen to gossip. I'll just give a little tip or advice. It's not original. It's from Jewish ethical teaching. Try to, in a friendly manner, rebut what the person's saying and attribute what they're talking about to something positive. So Larry really didn't mean to do that. I'm sure Larry really didn't mean to get drunk. It was an accident. He's not used to drinking. I'm sure he didn't intend it that way. It's the kind of statement I'm talking about. Otherwise, you just simply have to leave the conversation or just quite bluntly say, I'd really rather not talk about that. And the person, you run the risk there of offending the person.
Which is another reason, and this was really interesting to me, that, you know, so many people get those crazy forwarded emails that very often turn out not to be true. And when I receive one, I always wonder why somebody doesn't send back a Snopes.com link or something to say, I looked this up, it's actually not the case, please stop forwarding this to everyone.
But, oh, well, I've done that and lost a couple friends that way. Being a rumor and gossip researcher has been tough on my social relationships. It's embarrassing to send out that retraction in the first place. And then it's also embarrassing to tell the person that sent it to you that they were really incorrect in what they sent out. And it's triply embarrassing and difficult to tell the person that they really ought to forward the retraction to every person that they sent it to, which is really their responsibility. It really truly is their responsibility to send a retraction to everybody that they sent the original false forward to.
I've never seen one of those yet. So,
I believe I've seen maybe one, maybe not even one, in my in as many years that I get many email forwards.
An email from John in Fort Worth says, I worked at a place with a woman who gossiped, visited with the good old boys, and knew everything about everyone, and then dutifully sat down with the insecure chief of the company and told him everything. She was looked out for. So so we know in the group who to be careful of telling things to.
You may know. I talked with a fellow many years ago who was a manager in a large corporation, and he advised having what he called a sonar man, somebody who would relay information to the upper echelons for ostensibly for good purposes, so that the upper echelons would know what the informal hearsay was going on in the rank and file of the organization. But John is correct. This sounds like this woman that he's referring to used gossip to get into the in-group of that organization, and other people ferreted out the facts. You notice that an accurate perception of her arose. And they were careful what they said to her.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. My guest is Nicholas DeFonso. His book is called The Water Cooler Effect. A psychologist explores the extraordinary power of rumors. Let's speak next to Thomas in Dallas. Hello, Thomas.
Hi. Yeah, coming from a more of a logic background, when you hear one rumor maybe repeated or different sources, that's one argument from my perspective. And, it adds to it's an appeal to authority that you hear from more voices, but it doesn't make it any more true. And I'm thinking in terms of the Iraq war lead-up, we heard these countervailing or contrary messages that came out, and it seemed to me that there was no attempt to address those or to, argue against those or to, refute them. And that seems to prove to me that they weren't making a serious or earnest case. And again, I think you're talking about the things that are explicitly true or not true, and of course, so much of what we do, it doesn't really necessarily work that way. But again, the earnestness of people, and in that way, a willingness to deal or address with contradictions and challenges, I think is a great harbinger of the veracity and the earnestness of the rumor.
Thanks for your call. Let's get a response from
sure.
Nick. Thanks.
Yeah, Thomas is really expressing a cogent and intelligent and perspicacious concern. Yeah, lots of discussion leads to lots of repetition of rumors and hearing it lots of times. That can either lead to a more accurate kind of rumor or a less accurate kind of rumor, depending upon, as Thomas put it, the earnestness and I would say the motivation of the people involved. If the motivation is to ferret out the true state of affairs, and if the group has a diverse set of participants, that is, they're not all conservatives or they're not all liberals, for example, if the groups are divided along those lines, they're not all one party or they're not all the other position, then if there's diverse discussion, motivation to ferret out the facts, the truth has a good chance of emerging if there is something objective to discover. If there's not, if it's difficult to find something objective, or if we don't have the right motivation, if we're just trying to put the other group down rather than ferret out the facts, and if we don't have a diverse set of people discussing it, if it's just all one group, then there's a far less of a chance of an accurate rumor emerging.
Thomas's call led nicely into talking about rumors of a public nature. Before this, we were talking mostly about rumors that start in a place where we have sort of one-on-one contact with the actors involved. But I wonder if you would talk about how rumors get started about not just political candidates, but a variety of different issues that are of interest to the public that might, in fact, be verified or not by using traditional media sources or research sources.
Right. So how do rumors originate? So one way they originate, which we have very little smoking guns for, it's very hard to research this, is they're crafted for a strategic purpose. So perhaps some of these rumors we've been hearing in the news lately related to the election are under this. Perhaps there are some people who are actually crafting these rumors and starting to disseminate them. But once they craft them and put them out there, the reason they get passed along and they get blown up is because of they capitalize or they explain some uncertainty that's out there. So lots of times it's uncertainty, or people just are filled with questions about a situation, and the rumor attempts to explain those questions or answer those questions.
We have an email from Paul in Terrell who says, people believe what they want to be true. This morning, a man called into the Diane Rehm show. He said, I heard Obama tell George Stephanopoulos that he was a Muslim. He went on to some length about it. Diane correctly said that Obama had told Stephanopoulos his father was a Muslim, but this man clearly believed his own version.
Right. So people tend to believe what they want to believe. I think that there's another element to it. If the person is normal psychological functioning, they'll be limited by the social forces that call upon people to tell the truth. So this person believes that Obama's Muslim. That's a false rumor. But probably this person comes from a social network in which he's reinforced for saying that. So in a sense, yes, he does believe what he wants to believe, but he's also rewarded for believing it and saying it and passing it along.
So he finds no reason to examine that and think, is this really true? He just keeps on.
Well, it's probably a little more complicated than that. He probably doesn't. You're absolutely right. He probably doesn't check his sources and quickly find out that it was false. But on the other hand, he may distrust the sources. He may distrust Snopes.com and the media. It was a recent Harris poll that found that 51% of the public distrust the media. The effect is larger. This was recent. The effect was larger for Republicans than Democrats, but that's still a rather large percentage. The same phenomenon occurred in the Soviet Union prior to the end of the Cold War, prior to the end of the Iron Curtain. And at that time, the media was controlled by the state. So nobody trusted the media because it had to be okayed by the state, and they relied heavily upon rumors. I fear that with the growing distrust of a large segment of the population in the media, we're approaching the same kind of situation where we rely more on rumor spread about the blogosphere than we do Snopes.com, normal media agencies, veteran journalists, and so forth.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak to John in Irving. Hello, John.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I just wanted to share with your audience my three of my favorite quotes about rumors and gossip. One of them is by Will Rogers, who said, rumor travels faster, but it don't stay put as long as truth. The other one is by Samuel Johnson. I believe he was an English author or something. Anyway, this regards the media. He said, it is more from carelessness about the truth than from intention of lying about it. There is so much falsehood in the world.
And quickly, number three?
And then quickly, number three is by Abraham Lincoln, who said, truth is generally the best vindication against slander.
Interesting. What do you think about those? Do you have favorite aphorisms about rumors, Nick?
Well, that first one by Will Rogers is actually the beginning of a chapter on rumor accuracy. So, John, I like all three of those quotes. I've used one of them at the beginning of the chapter on accuracy, and I think it says something about facts, that they are, as John Adams said, stubborn things. If the truth can be discovered, and if people want to discover the truth, they will tend to be discovered. The truth has a tendency to stick longer than rumors do. So I'm eternally and somewhat optimistic on this matter, though I do see that there are lots of problems with getting at the truth.
Let's talk about rumor management, what an individual can do or a corporation can do if there's a rumor out there that is, we'll assume at this point that the rumor is correct, but that the association or the individual doesn't want it out there. At that point, is there nothing one can do?
Well, the person ought to come clean and confirm the rumor if it is indeed true. There's no point in trying to deny something that's false. And, of course, I give a great recent example of this is that part of the Sarah Palin, Trig Palin rumor was true, that her daughter was pregnant, at least is pregnant. So John McCain's campaign came out and said the rumor was false, but they confirmed that part of it, which was true, and gave the full story. And that's what I would advise to anyone who faces a true rumor, certainly, is to come out and confirm it. A false rumor, or at least partially false rumor, they should come out and give the whole story.
Does that help if you give the whole story? If there's something completely false circulating, are the people who already believe that likely to be disinclined from believing it?
You have to give a denial. Otherwise, if you say nothing, you're afraid of dignifying it with a comment, or you say, I'm not going to respond to that, people will wonder why you're not refuting it, why you're not attempting to deny it, especially if it's a damaging and widespread rumor. So absolutely, if someone is facing a false rumor that's probably being spread for malicious reasons, I advise them, and the research shows that they should deny it strongly, clearly, use a third-party, trusted, neutral source, and they should give a point-by-point explanation of why the rumor is false.
So your next book can be PR with an eye toward rumors and gossip. My guest is the author of The Water Cooler Effect, A Psychologist Explores the Extraordinary Power of Rumors. His name is Nick DeFonso. We'll be back in just a moment with more. We will also talk about urban legends and why they may be misnamed. You can join the conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, offering flexible part-time graduate study. You can follow your passion at SMU and learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking this hour about the book The Water Cooler Effect, A Psychologist Explores the Extraordinary Power of Rumors. Its author is here, Nicholas DeFonso. He's professor of psychology at the Rochester Institute of Technology. You can join us via email to think@kera.org. I want to talk for a minute about urban legends, which, as you point out, often have nothing to do with cities. They're these sort of titillating stories about some dangerous thing that happened to someone. Why do we have them?
For entertainment, to teach us cultural values, and to offer morality tales about behavior in the larger modern technological society. So you're absolutely right. Urban legends often have nothing to do with the city. A better name might be contemporary legends or modern legends.
How often do they have even a grain of truth in them?
That's a good question. I don't know. They might have arisen from a rumor touching down after a time again, people hear them again and again. They might sort of morph into this very good story. And that's essentially what these urban legends are. They're very good stories. They're narratives with a plot, a setting, rises to a climax, and then a denouement, and then some moral to the tale. And they might morph into this urban legend that kind of hangs out there for many, many years. I'll give you an example of one of my favorite urban legends that teaches us a morality tale, a lesson. And that's the Concrete Cadillac story. Man who drove a concrete truck, was driving through his neighborhood one day while he was at work, and he happened to be near his house where he lived, and he parked nearby and walked up to the house where he happened to see through the window his wife talking with a strange man. Thinking the worst, he backed his concrete truck into the Cadillac convertible that was in his driveway. This wasn't his own. And he dumped all of this concrete into the Cadillac, and the thing just sunk to the ground because of this massive weight. And then he drove off. Well, when he came home that night, the concrete-filled Cadillac was just being towed away. He walked in the house, and his wife was in tears. She had scrimped and saved for many years so that she could buy a Cadillac for her husband, but somebody had filled it with concrete. So the moral of the story, the thing that it teaches us, is don't be so suspicious of those people that you love.
Yeah, that's very. I guess a lot of them are like that, and there are the others that where someone has had a wild night out with someone, and then they wake up in a bed of ice, and they've got no kidneys or something crazy.
That's right, and the moral of the story there is don't be promiscuous. Something bad will happen to you.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak next with Kenny in Dallas. Hello, Kenny.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
A couple of things. I was born in 1963, and I grew up thinking how odd it was that my neighbors weren't close to each other. I grew up in a suburban area in Utah, and I thought, well, it's because my mother doesn't want anybody to know her business. She was a single mother and worked very hard, and so I'm wondering what the social dynamics, you know, like from the 70s forward, if there's what the guests would want to comment on that. And then also, now today, with my neighbors, I can sit and actually gossip with them via text messaging on the cell phone. So we've done a 360 or a 180, if you will. And then the last thing, it actually is a comment, is I have actually gossiped or created gossip intentionally to people that I didn't trust. Hmm. And if the rumor would come back, I knew that I couldn't trust them.
Hmm. Well, I'll take that last one, Kenny. That's a very creative use of gossip, and I'm not sure I've ever heard that before. But what you're doing there is essentially using that age-old maxim that if somebody gossips to you, they're probably gossiping about you. And I think you were testing that in a roundabout way. You were planning information and then seeing if it got out, much like an intelligence agency would plan information to see if there are leaks in the network. As far as the cell phones, we're definitely more of a connected society today. In the last 10 years, with the rise of these mobile units, both computers and cell phones, and pagers and PDAs and all this sort of thing, we're definitely going back to maybe an earlier age where there were dense connections in one's village. But the village today is not geographical in nature. Rather, it's technological in nature. It's on the web or whatever electronic matrix we happen to be on.
We haven't talked too much about this yet, but there is also a function to gossip, and that is blowing off steam and sort of venting about people who have irritated us, not necessarily with a desire to hurt that person.
Right. So not with a desire to hurt that person. Sometimes, though, you do want to hurt that person. You want to get back at the person. This might be a revenge motive. We might gossip about them to hurt their chances at getting a promotion. Or we might just take malicious glee at it because it makes us feel better, as we've talked about before. So, yeah. So we might also share gossip with somebody especially if we know that it's not going to actually hurt that person; it'll never get back to them. But it might vent our own frustration or hostility against the group that person belongs to, or our situation in general.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Mark in Southlake. Hello, Mark.
Hi. I had a disagreement with one statement your guest had said earlier about verifying a rumor if it was true. I can think of one instance where that would be a bad thing. Mm-hmm. If you're running a business and there is going to be a layoff, but not the full extent of it is known, mm-hmm. but the rumor's out there, you don't really want to verify that it is, because it can basically freeze the productivity of the business at the time when the business really needs productivity.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what in those situations where it's difficult to give full and complete information, what needs to be done is to explain exactly why you can't give full and complete information. So what I advise managers to do in those situations where they either can't know the full facts or it would be bad for the business, even bad for the hearer, the employees, if they knew the full extent of the information. You just simply have to give a context for why you have to be silent. That in and of itself will tend to increase trust and at least limit the uncertainty that's there. Plus, in that kind of situation, I advise managers to help employees think of how to prepare for the worst case scenario, and that has a tendency to reduce anxiety and also increase trust. Because it sends a signal that you're on the same team as the employee, but you just can't give them full information. So that's a very good point, Mark, to bound what I said before about verifying a rumor.
Are big companies or small companies any more or less susceptible to the rumor mill from within their own ranks?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think it depends upon the local social, the density of the local social network. In other words, how many people are you connected with in your circle within the company? So that could be large, it could be small, and it also depends upon the level of trust in an organization. If you happen to be in a small organization where there's a high degree of trust, we're going to find that the only time you spread rumors are when there's a high degree of uncertainty or anxiety. But the same goes for a large corporation. So I think that my hunch would be that there really isn't that much of a difference between the two.
It seems that in every workplace or maybe every sort of local culture, whether it's a team or a school, there is always that person or that couple of people that no matter what their rank in the company, you know that if you're wondering about something, you can go to them and they have the latest scoop. Has your research at all looked into anything special about these people? Are they at a social advantage or disadvantage?
We call these people liaisons or opinion leaders. They're very well connected. They're often in management, so supervisors are formally connected with lots of people because of the hierarchical structure of the organization. But those people control, in one study by Keith Davis many years ago, found that they control 20% of the organizational word of mouth that flows through a company. That's a
wow.
Large percentage. So they have an inordinate amount of influence on the kind of word of mouth and rumors that are spread in that organization. But as far as personality traits, we don't really know that much about these liaisons.
It would seem to make sense, though, for a company to identify those people within the organization that have that power and sort of make sure that they're getting the right information.
Absolutely. In fact, that's part of the whole word of mouth marketing movement that's sweeping the world in the last 5 years, is to identify these communication liaisons and get the word out to them that you want spread, you know, buy this product, buy this service, and to drop the word, supposedly informally, among your friends and peers, and it'll spread because they are the ones who are called the liaisons or the hubs. They're the communication centers.
We have an email, and I guess this bears pointing out. An email from Pam says, a previous emailer was incorrect. I heard the interview of Obama with George Stephanopoulos. Obama did say, my Muslim faith, not my father's Muslim faith. Obama misspoke. Stephanopoulos corrected him. She heard the Diane Rehm show this morning, and she says she did not say what the previous emailer said. I didn't hear the segment at all, so I'm just repeating this, and now we will consider that subject closed, and anyone who wants to know the exact text should probably go and look it up. And this is how these things get started. You know.
Still, I'm glad you read that email from Pam. Chris, because it illustrates the kind of back and forth sense-making that goes on in a rumor situation.
So people say, wait, that's not what happened, and then they correct, and then somebody else comes up with their own version?
That's correct. That's correct.
We have time for one more call, and we might as well go to Jeff in Arlington. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, it's been my experience that the media does tend to sensationalize things, and later if they find their facts are somewhat in error, may print a retraction buried in the publication. Would it be your position that this doesn't happen or that we should trust the media anyway? And I'll take my answer off air.
Thanks for your call.
Oh, sure. Media definitely makes errors, although studies show they make fewer errors than the blogosphere does. And you're right, when they print a retraction, it's not front page news. So the retraction gets less mileage than the original story does. But as a system, I still think that it works overall, over time, works pretty well. The truth kind of bubbles up if, again, people are interested in the facts, and if the media are held accountable. That's what I hope in this, some of the recent errors that some of these recent political rumors on both sides of the ideological spectrum that have been pretty wild and pretty rampant. What I hope will counteract that is maybe a reform movement in the media to hold themselves to a much higher standard, to the normal standard that they're typically held to. We trust the media. We need the media. We have to have objective third-party sources, neutral third-party sources that are committed to giving us factual information that can be supported. You know, so that's a very important function in our democracy and in our civilization. So I think the retractions are important. They absolutely do help. It's very embarrassing for a paper to print the retraction. So I think that those retractions are important in the emergence of accuracy.
Clearly, this is a fascinating field of study for a lot of people based on the response that we've had. I'm wondering how you decided to make it the focus of your career.
Well, I really have been interested in this accuracy question. It just astounds me how in some situations, the rumors that I studied and encountered and have followed end up being excellent. They're better than your news service, whereas in other situations, they're abysmal. People are terrible at ferreting out the facts, and you get these wild and crazy stories that are circulating and believed by many people. That's the question. It's a really philosophically and epistemological question that has interested and fascinated me over these past 16 years.
The new book by Nicholas DeFonso is The Water Cooler Effect, A Psychologist Explores the Extraordinary Power of Rumors. Nick, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, it's been my pleasure, Chris. Thank you.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.